Hello, welcome to Sonic Tonic. I'm Greg Perret, and I'm extending a very warm welcome to all of you who are listening. I'll be bringing you music, interviews, and special features from the world of jazz and blues. This podcast is brought to you by the California Jazz Foundation. It's a nonprofit that assists California musicians who have given their lives to this music but have fallen on rough times. Our podcast will reflect the talent, the journeys, and the insights of a wide range of musical artists. So sit back, relax, and enjoy a Sonic Tonic. My guest for this episode of Sonic Tonic is John Beasley. During my interview with him, I was really struck when he told me the story of how as a kid, he'd sit in his room and imagine himself playing along with his favorite bands. Well, that kid's imagination became reality, because on March 3rd of 2021, the day of this interview, John Beasley had 4 nominations for the 2021 Grammys. These nominations were for his work as a composer, conductor, and arranger in jazz. Now, that in and of itself is outstanding, but it doesn't stop there. He was also involved on 2 other projects that received Grammy nominations, one as the arranger, orchestrator, and conductor on the Steven Soderbergh film Let Them All Talk, starring Meryl Streep, and for the other nominee, Ruthie Foster, John did the big band arrangements for her project entitled Life at the Paramount in the category of Best Contemporary Blues Album. From a personal perspective, I've known John a long time, and I can think of no one more deserving. John is a great guy, as well as being very, very gifted. In my opinion, he represents the best of what it means to be a musician. During this podcast, I'm going to play 4 of John's original tunes. The first one is called Steve-O, and I'm going to play that before the interview. Then the other 3 after the interview. Much of this episode is about imagination and creativity realized. In the context of this podcast, that means the music you're about to hear was conceived, written, arranged, and orchestrated by John. So here's the first tune. It's called Steve-O. We'll be right back. How you doing, John?
Good, man. Just was mixing today in Germany, believe it or not.
Oh, you're in Germany?
No, I'm here, but, you know, there's this cool program called Audio Movers.
Yeah.
You know, that I can listen to the mix here in my studio and be on Zoom with them and make comments and stuff. It's pretty cool. So I've been doing that, and, you know, doing a little practicing, a little writing.
Well, it sounds like you've been doing more than a little. It sounds like you're a pretty busy guy.
Well, you know, this is music business. It goes and it comes.
We hate it when the phone rings, and we hate it when the phone doesn't ring.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that old joke. How do you get a musician to complain? You give him a gig.
I'm really happy to catch up with you, and I'm really happy that you're spending this time to share your insights and your process. Yeah, John, you got 4 Grammy nominations, and you contributed to the projects of 2 other Grammy nominees. So in my opinion, that speaks volumes to your talent.
Thank you, man. Thank you. It's good, honest, hard work, you know?
Yeah, I do. John, one of the directions I wanted to pursue with you is the process of a musician who arranges and orchestrates, and all the complexities that go into that. I feel you're one of those musicians who understands these things deeply, and on top of it, you're a great pianist.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think the skills of arranging and orchestrating don't get talked about enough. You know, some of my favorites when it comes to arranging and orchestrating were Gil Evans and Nelson Riddle. And I got to work with the great Billy Byers and Pat Williams, both great arrangers and orchestrators.
Yeah.
So what can you share with us about your process?
Well, for me, my bridge music into jazz was Earth, Wind & Fire and Chicago, Blood, Sweat & Tears, right? And they were kind of horn bands. My family were all musicians. My mom was a brass player. So I kind of grew up around bands, right? And going to my dad's rehearsals and gigs or whatever. But so I was sort of naturally attracted to, I guess, jazz rock of that era, you know, R&B, you know, horns and horn bands, watch 103rd Street Rhythm Band, you know, that kind of sound. Commodores, you know, they had horns in the bands, Ohio Players. And then my dad brought home, as a birthday present, because he could see I was kind of heading in that way, Central Park North by Thad Jones, Mel Lewis, and the orchestra. And that had the Groove Merchant on it. And I was like, wow, this is just killing, you know? And then I guess the next record after that was Quincy, Walking in Space. Those were all arranging, you know, large ensemble records, and those were my bridge records. So I got the bug through that and actually wanted to be an arranger even before I got really seriously into playing jazz piano. It was like, wow, that's what I want to do. I dove deep at that point. I was a geeky kid, you know, in junior high school, you know, locked in my room, playing along to records, pretending I was playing with those guys, just pretending and playing along, you know. Then eventually got into jazz piano. My dad brought Maiden Voyage as a birthday present one day for me. At first, I was like, I don't know what this is, but man, the more I kept listening, and that totally changed my life. So I really got into piano playing. So the point of all this is that I don't really see much difference between being a pianist or a jazz musician in a band and being an arranger. The thing that naturally came to me was some kind of a treatment to a tune. Or, you know, as a pianist, we're going to play this tune, but, you know, how do I vibe it in a way?
Right.
Right? To make it on my own, you know? And that's arranging. It's on the spot. It's improvising, but it's still coming up with a sort of sound or feel or for a particular tune, you know?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. You have a gift to conceptualize a tune as a player. But, John, you also have a gift of conveying your concepts to a larger ensemble. Man, that's a great skill.
I was always one of those cats that, you know, when I was on walks, or I'd always be singing music, you know. And that evolved into, like, singing arrangements in a way. So that you're kind of, you can work on music, you know, in that regard without even being at your instrument.
Right, exactly.
So then, you know, it's like, you know, I got into Cuban Fire, and Pete Rugolo, you know, I just ate Quincy Jones up because I just loved his taste, you know.
And yes.
He had his own sound. Thad, they all had their own sound. And then, of course, Nelson Riddle, like you said, man, brilliant imaginations. Like every arrangement is like a movie score because it just goes so well with the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah. Quincy and all the other people we're mentioning knew how to convey creative and imaginative musical ideas to larger ensembles. And as I've said, I feel you possess that same ability.
Thank you. But like I said, it's like it comes from imagination first. I'm actually a self-taught orchestrator.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what I know is sort of trial by error.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you copy by hand your stuff early on, right?
Yeah.
And you bring it in, and then you'd realize, oh, shit, I got to copy this again. And, you know, all that kind of thing, you know, long before the computer. And so you kind of learn fast. You know, there was this Henry Mancini book that helped me out a lot. My dad helped me out a lot, talking to other arrangers. But I didn't go to college or anything like that. So it's pretty much done by ear.
Mm-hmm.
And then talking to saxophone players about what works and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to play oboe. I played oboe all the way through school. And, you know, because of the same fingerings, I played flute and saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped sort of knowing what works and what doesn't on a wind instrument. And then just asking people about trumpets, you know, what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, so getting back to your statement of trial by error. Yeah, many of the tools we have today eliminate that.
Exactly.
What's your take?
Exactly. With notation software, you know, you can try things and nobody will ever know that you failed, which is a good thing. You know, you can, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to go for it. Ah, it's not really working. And then you just erase and try something else. You know, back in the day, you didn't have that opportunity. You just, if you went for something, you knew exactly as soon as you heard it back from the band or their reaction to it, whether it worked or not, then you'd have to go back and write it all out again. And, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I do get the advantages of having these tools. But, you know, how we learn as human beings has always been an interesting topic for me, and I still think finding a balance between those tools and actual physical human trial and error is the best of both worlds.
What resonates with me, what you're saying, is that you grow more from sort of failure than you do success.
Yep, well said.
And what I meant by the computer making it easy, it makes it easier to fail and to succeed because it's faster. It's immediate.
Yes.
Right? There's nothing like bringing your chart out in front of a band, passing it out and hearing it, standing in front of the band and hearing it back. That is the thrill of a lifetime, whether it's good or bad, you know? And then, of course, you know, when you're on the session, you know, you can always change it right there. And that's the beauty of it, too, being able to hear
right. What's
wrong, because you know where the dead bodies are and go, oh, okay, that note needs to change, or you need to lay out there. It's too thick or something like that, you know. I love that. You know, I love sort of being on the high wire. It's like playing, you know. It's like being on the high wire act and being challenged to change something immediately and recognizing what it is. And I don't think that you develop that skill without failing in front of a band first or, you know, in front of the computer now.
And that was my point. I think the human interaction side of it is oftentimes it's taken for granted.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to talk a little bit now about these four Grammy nominations. One is as an arranger for an artist named Maria Mendes. Now, I'm not familiar with her. What's the story on that one?
Yeah, she's Portuguese, but a jazz singer. And she wanted to go back to the roots of Portugal music, which is Portuguese music, which is fado. They're very old songs, a lot of them about working class people, mothers and daughters and wives sending their loved ones out to sea and wondering if they're going to come back. Long lost love. And so they're very passionate, bloody, tragic songs. She took a chance, which I love, to really give me the opportunity to totally reimagine those songs. You know, I reharmonized them, turn them into jazz grooves. Some of them are in 5/4. Waltzes, just totally changed it. In fact, I did not listen to the original tunes. I looked at the sheet music and read it. And she sang it with me and just let my imagination go like I was a player.
You know?
Yeah, it's a really beautiful record. And then about through the process, we goes, oh man, this would be such a great orchestral type record. So she got the Metropole Orchestra in Holland, where she lives now, on board, and they're on half the record. And it's cool. It's a string section and five woodwinds.
Now, John, I also see that your orchestra, which is called Monkestra, was nominated.
Yeah, that's our labor of love, Monkestra.
So for our listeners, that's a band you started to perform Thelonious Monk tunes. And in time, it gained tremendous success, not only playing your arrangements of Monk tunes, but your own original compositions as well. Now, I heard that you've got various configurations of that band around the globe. Is that a fair statement?
Just sort of. I mean, some of the parts are interchangeable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if the festival or the gig pays enough to where I can bring the original cats,
I got you.
They're all from L.A., then I'll do that. Or I'll bring half of them or five of them or whatever I can, you know?
I got you.
And then fill out the rest with cats in New York or in Europe. A lot of the gigs in Europe are with the radio orchestras. So that's just me coming out with the charts. After the first record, was that released? See, the first or the second one was released during Monk's Centennial.
Mm-hmm.
The first three records were mostly Thelonious Monk's music rearranged and reimagined.
Okay.
And it's a 16-piece big band, and we have three records out on Mack Avenue Records.
Mm-hmm.
And all three were nominated for Grammys.
Wow, outstanding.
Anyway, that first during that Centennial year, we must have had 40 gigs with a big band.
Wow.
That year. It was amazing. Yeah, it was so much fun. And to be able to play Monk's music is an honor and a privilege, you know.
Yeah, well, I thought your arrangements of Monk's music were brilliant. And your original music that you sent me is musically brilliant as well. Did you guys record that music here in L.A.?
The Monkestra stuff was all done here.
Who were some of the guys in that band? The drums and bass were killer.
Ulysses Owens on drums.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to name the whole band?
No. I was just, the performances were killer. And
thank you.
I mean, the performances were killer.
The new record is Monkestra plays John Beasley. The other records were all Thelonious Monk.
I got you.
This record, we kind of like, we did half Monk tunes and half my originals.
I got you.
And also, it's about half of the record is big band, mm-hmm. and half of the record is there's a couple of tracks with four horns, there's some trio stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that's like Masakea and Sam Rivers. I don't know what else is I sent you, but...
You sent me Steve-O, Sam Rivers, Song for Dub, Five Spot, Implication, Masakela, Be Youthful, and Black Thunder.
Yeah. Black Thunder is from a record called Positutely from, I think, 2011, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Jeff Watts. That was in New York. That's Jeff Watts on drums.
Okay.
James Genius on bass. Benny Maupin on tenor. And
Benny Maupin. Great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And Brian Lynch on trumpet. And that was my first Grammy nomination for Best Jazz Record.
I can think of no one deserving it more.
Thank you, man. Thank you, Greg Ray. I've known you a long time.
A long time. Well, John, I want to thank you on behalf of the California Jazz Foundation. I mean, you've been so supportive of us and our mission. And I want to thank you personally for doing this interview. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. And I know your listeners are... I appreciate you. We all appreciate you as musicians and artists, man, doing this. And yeah, keep on keeping on, man.
All right, John, you take care, man.
All right, Greg. Thanks for this.
Now, toward the end of that interview, John mentioned three tunes. They were Masakela, Sam Rivers, and Black Thunder. I'm going to play them for you now. I'll start with Sam Rivers, then Masakela, and then I'll take this episode of Sonic Tonic out with Black Thunder. All right, enjoy. Thank you. That's what I'm talking about. That's good stuff. You know, I forgot to ask John about the title of this next tune. It's called Masekela, and I'm guessing that it's a tribute to Hugh Masekela, the great trumpet player. I'm sorry to say I don't have that information for this podcast, but at any rate, here's the tune Masekela by John Beasley. Thank you. Most excellent, most excellent. So before we close it out, I want to thank everyone for listening to Sonic Tonic and for your support of the California Jazz Foundation. All right, so I'm going to close it out with this last tune. It's called Black Thunder. As John mentioned, it's from 2011. It was recorded in New York, and it was John's first Grammy nomination. Black Thunder. Again, I want to thank you all for listening to Sonic Tonic. Please visit the California Jazz Foundation website at californiajazzfoundation.org and find out how you can help a musician in need. So until the next one, this is Greg Perret wishing you all the best.